You may be seated. The next case before the court is Michael Hoven and Madeline Hoven versus Banner Associates. Greg Wheeler appears and will be arguing on behalf of the appellants. And Stephen Olberg appears and will be arguing on behalf of appellees. Obviously, I recognize both of you have appealed the separate determinations, and so we've set this for 20 minutes each for you to have an opportunity to argue your positions. And we'll see how the argument goes. If we think we need a rebuttal, you know, we'll talk about whether a reply is necessary, but at this point we'll go 20-20, and you can present your respective arguments as to both orders. So, Mr. Wheeler, you can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Again, my name is Greg Wheeler, represent Banner & Associates, Inc. It's an engineering and surveying firm in Brookings, and we're here today on the cross appeals, I guess you'd say, of the ruling of Judge Flemmer of the First Circuit on our motion for summary judgment that we filed with the circuit court. Judge Flemmer denied our motion for summary judgment in part based on the statute of limitations issues. He granted our motion for summary judgment in part on the fraudulent concealment claims that were asserted by the plaintiff against Banner. We contend and have argued in our briefs and on this appeal that we should have been given summary judgment based on the running of the statute of limitations for all of the claims and based on the running of the statute of repose as to some of the older claims. And we also contend that Judge Flemmer was correct in granting summary judgment to Banner on the fraudulent concealment claims. This court reviews the grant or denial of a summary judgment de novo, and we have a substantial record that was created for this case, as I'm sure you know. The facts are not terribly complicated, although the surveying that's involved is a little bit complicated. This all began in 2006 when Banner was working for Dennis and Carol Gregerson. This is up by Blue Dog Lake in Day County. And the Gregersons performed certain survey work, boundary surveys, and they did an elevation certificate. Banner did an elevation certificate and survey work for the Gregersons in 2006. And as part of that process, a benchmark, an iron pin, was set on a portion of the Gregerson property, and the elevation of that pin, the benchmark for the property, was set. And it was identified as 1806.959, essentially 96. And again, that work was for the Gregersons, not for Mr. and Mrs. Hoven. The Gregersons subdivided the property and sold a portion of it to the Hovens in 2007. The pin was actually on the portion of the property that was sold to the Hovens. The Hovens decided that they wanted to put a house on that portion of the property that they purchased, and they contacted Banner and asked for the elevation of that pin, that iron pin, that benchmark that was there. And this is in late 2007. Actually, it's in late summer 2007. Banner sent a surveyor out there and took the elevation from that Gregerson survey for that iron pin benchmark and put a last stake in the ground where it was and put the exact same elevation on that lath, 1806.96. That's all the work that Banner did in 2007. That was it. And there was no, Hovens were not charged for that work. They did not pay for that work. That was it. Banner was not involved in the construction of the house on the property or any of that work. The next thing, the house was completed. House was built the finished floor elevation of the house was the key thing that Mr. Hovind wanted that benchmark elevation for. So he'd gone to the city and decided what elevation, the finished floor elevation, main floor, needed to be in order to be above the base flood elevation. They built the house. They set the finished floor elevation, the roof, the walls, the doors, the windows. The house was closed in the fall of 2007. Again, Banner was not a part of any of that work. Banner's not involved again until 2009, when they were asked by the Hovinds to shoot the finished floor elevation. They did that. Some of the timing's kind of confusing there. It looks like that was not provided until 2010. But the main work that Banner did for the Hovinds was in 2010. They prepared an elevation certificate for the Hovinds in 2010, and that's a part of the record that we've got. It's a form that is filled out by the engineer that has the information that is required by the federal government for the flood maps and things like that. It's got the conversion between the two different datum that were used by surveyors. There's a 1929 datum that was outdated, and surveyors had switched over to the NAVD 88 by this time, and actually there's another one that's coming out now that's even supposed to be more accurate. But the elevations were of the pin was marked in NAVD 88, and the elevation certificate had a sketch, which we've included as part of our brief, that had a sketch of the house, a sketch of the property. It lists the base flood elevation of 1810.9 under NAVD 88. It lists the house finished floor elevation of 1810.0 under NAVD 88. Those are clearly shown there.
Council, I just want to make sure, it was my understanding that those drawings, when that elevation certificate is provided, those are all attached as one document?
Yes. So you get the form that I talked about, and they're required to attach some photographs. They're attached. The sketch is attached. There's some survey data that's attached, too, including the conversion itself is on the last page. And all of those, the whole package, was included as an exhibit to the Hovinds' complaint. It formed the basis for the claims that they asserted against Hovind, which was filed in, or against Banner, I'm sorry, that the Hovinds asserted against Banner. And that was filed in 2019. After the May 2010 elevation certificate, there was no contact whatsoever between Banner and the Hovinds. And the Hovinds had everything that they ended up using to file their complaint as of May 11th, 2010. And again, the complaint was not filed until July of 2019. So on the statute of limitations issue, we argued that there's a statute of limitations that we believe applies. It's in SDCL 15-2-13. And it is 6-year statute of limitations for damage to real property. Also, that statute also includes contract claims to the extent there would be contract claims here. This court has applied that statute, that 6-year statute of limitations, to several construction claims over the years for property damage. We also, as I mentioned, there's a statute of repose in SDCL 15-2A-3. It's a 10-year statute of repose that we argued bars the claims for the work in 2007. So the last work that was done in 2010 was barred by the statute of limitations in the 6-year statute of limitations in 15-2-13. And the 2007 work would also be barred by that because it's much older than that. But the 2007 work would also be barred by the 10-year statute of repose. That is our argument. Judge Flemmer felt that the statute of repose replaced the statute of limitations, and the statute of limitations was no longer applicable. We contend that that's not the case. There's nothing in the legislative intent for the statute of repose that it was intended to replace the statute of limitations. We believe that they would both apply or both could apply depending on the timing. And there's support for that. We referenced the Gaddis versus Meyer modernizing case where this court in a footnote indicated that SDCL 15-2A-3 does not operate to extend the time of filing an action otherwise barred by the running of the applicable period of limitation. And that's our contention here, is that the six-year statute of limitation would apply to all of these claims. And there have been some other cases in the legal malpractice and the medical malpractice arena where this court has dealt with both the statute of repose and the statute of limitations for fraud and that kind of thing. In those cases, they're a little bit different because the statute of repose is always shorter than the statute of limitations. But there's been a recognition in those cases as well that they can both apply depending on the circumstances.
It's a little bit different as well because oftentimes in our statute of repose, non-accrual-based commencement of the time, that is, it goes from the date of injury. This isn't that way. This one begins to run on the date of substantial completion.
For the statute of repose.
Correct.
Under the statute. That's
yeah.
what it
the, So it's
the
not the date of injury. It seems like it's delayed, and that's a legislative choice, and maybe it makes absolutely no difference. But at least they're written just a little bit differently.
Yes, and for the accrual for the statute of limitations under the six-year statute is when the plaintiff knew or should have known of the existence of the claim. So as you mentioned, there is a different trigger. It can be a different trigger there. It could be at substantial completion. It could be at a different time. I think it's worth noting that the personal injury statute has the same language as the property damage statute. And we would contend that if there's a personal injury claim that arose out of construction activities, the three-year statute could apply, or the 10-year statute of repose could apply, depending on when the injury took place and how old the project, how long it had been since the project had been substantially complete. So, again, we contend that they both can apply, and they both do. The statute of limitations applies to all the claims because they're all more than 6 years before a suit was filed, and the statute of repose applies to the 2007 work.
And so, as I understand it, your argument is we don't even get to the statute of repose here. The claim's knocked out under the limitation period.
Right. That's exactly right. So anything that's older than July of 2013 is knocked out by the statute of limitations. And all of the work, again, our last work was in May of 2010. So everything is older than 6 years before they filed suit. And again, the trigger is whether they knew or should have known that the existence of the claim. I think the Hovens had said that they didn't pay attention to the elevation certificate and what it said, but it contained everything that they eventually used to file their claim. Again, like I said, it was an attachment to their complaint. So we contend that they at least should have known in 2010 when they got that elevation certificate that their house, the finished floor elevation of their house, was below the base flood elevation, and any claims that they wanted to assert against Banner, they could have asserted at that time. The other half of this is the fraudulent concealment issue, and again, we contend that the circuit court correctly granted summary judgment to Banner on that issue. We cite to a couple cases, again, the Gaddis case and the Cleveland versus BDL case that deal with these issues and the argument that the statute, either the statute of limitations or the statute of repose, do not apply because of fraud. Under the statute of limitations, it's kind of the common law. You get into the fraudulent concealment stuff. Under the statute of repose, it's written into the statute that you can't take advantage of the statute of repose if you're guilty of fraud, fraudulent misconduct, that kind of thing. But the cases are clear that unless there's a fiduciary or confidential or that relationship of trust, what's required to be shown is actual fraudulent concealment, not the omission of information. It's actual fraudulent concealment that prevents the plaintiff from knowing the existence of the claim or filing the claim that the plaintiff actually relied on, that sort of thing.
When you use the term actual fraudulent concealment, I interpret that, but tell me if I'm wrong, to mean some sort of affirmative act, not just an omission.
That's exactly what the cases say. Yeah, and I have a quote here somewhere, but that's exactly what the cases say. Here, there was no fiduciary relationship. I mean, it was, again, they marked an elevation in 2007. They did an elevation certificate, which is essentially a report that's provided by the engineer to the client, containing facts about the house and the property. That's all it is. They're not, as the cases look at, they're not representing the Hovind's interests in some trust or confidential type situation or relationship. So again, we contend that, the circuit court properly granted summary judgment on that issue because there's no support at all that Banner did anything to prevent the Hovinds from knowing the existence of their claims. I mean, after 2010, when the elevation certificate was provided, there was nothing, no contact, no work, nothing, until the lawsuit was filed in 2019.
So as I understand, one of the alternative arguments that the Hovinds are making here is that that we have recognized that there are some exceptions to that, an exception where there were facts material to the transaction that would be a scenario where, notwithstanding the absence of a fiduciary duty, such types of facts must be disclosed. Can you respond, and what is your response to that?
Well, I think even one response we have is I don't think that's the standard. If you look at the cases, they're pretty clear, and the courts go into this, whether there's a fiduciary relationship. And one of the Cleveland versus BDL case is an engineering firm, and there's a relationship with some homeowners. They didn't hire the homeowners, but there's also a contribution indemnity claim in there between the developer and the engineering firm that, they did have a contractual relationship. The other one is a subcontractor-homeowner relationship. Those are just arm's-length transactions, just like this one, that there's no fiduciary relationship. So the cases are pretty clear that if you don't have that, you have to have the active concealment. But even if we do get to that next step and active concealment isn't necessary and there's some possibility that it could be through not saying something. As I've mentioned, all of the information that's needed to know what they filed in their claim is in the elevation certificate that was provided to them in 2010. There's nothing else. They don't look at anything else. It's not like, well, you should have told us this, you didn't until much later. Everything that they're basing the claim on was in that certificate and in that sketch that I mentioned. So there's nothing that was left unsaid that should have been said. Again, it was all provided to them in the form that it was supposed to be provided in that elevation certificate. And it would have given them all the information that they would have needed to know that in 2007 they built the house too low. It was all contained at that time in that elevation certificate. So, again, I think whatever stand, I think that the cases are pretty clear that this situation with no fiduciary relationship, you have to show active concealment, fraudulent concealment. There's none here. There's no fraud. There's nothing that's actively. And, again, this is geared toward preventing the plaintiff from knowing the existence of the claim. That's the fraud that we're talking about. There's none of that here. And for that reason, again, we contend that the circuit court was correct in granting summary judgment to Banner on that issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ober, you can proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice Jensen and court members. May it please the court, counsel. I've been struck as I've listened to Banner's arguments and I read their submissions again that not once do they state the paramount or cardinal rule of summary judgment, and that is, of course, that all facts and all reasonable inferences to be drawn from the facts must be construed in favor of the non-moving party. They don't even state the correct standard on summary judgment in their appellate brief. And neither do they argue it. They completely ignore Mike Hovind's testimony. Mike Hovind's testimony and his sworn affidavit indicate that he went to Banner because he knew Banner was subdividing the lots so that Gregersons could sell them, including the lot that was reconfigured. In other words, Banner had to re-enlarge the platted lot that the Hovinds wanted to buy. Went to Banner and said, look, we're going to build a house, and we need to meet the Wabay 1810 minimum flood base flood elevation for a floor in this house. We need a benchmark. Banner suggests that it had no idea that the Hovinds were going to even build a home. They suggest that Mike Hovind just knew there was a control point from an elevation survey that had occurred a year prior somewhere out on their lot, and he called Banner and said, hey, can you give me the elevation of that? If that were the case, if Mike knew where the elevation's benchmark, the rebar pounded in the ground, was, then why did Stephen Ramos send him a survey signed, sealed, and dated showing its location and showing its elevation? You know, Banner, in response to request for admissions, I asked in request for admissions, number three, I said, admit that establishing the correct elevation benchmark for construction is a step that needed to be taken in this area of the subject property to ensure that the elevation of the construction met the base flood elevation for flood insurance and or local building code requirements. Here was Banner's response. Banner admits that it was necessary for the owner of the property in question to obtain benchmark information, including information such as the datum upon which the benchmark was determined, base flood elevation, and other pertinent information for use in establishing the finished floor elevation of any structure on the property prior to constructing on that property, or the owner of the structure on the property would potentially build the whole house at an elevation that could lead to an increased risk of flooding. The firm that was adopted by the city in its flood damage prevention ordinance has a base flood elevation of 1810. In that firm for this location, even though the 88 datum is more prevalent now, they use the NGVD 1929 datum. There just happens to be a 0.915 feet difference or 10.98 inches difference between the two datums. So the base flood elevation in Wabay in the published firm that's adopted by city ordinance is in NGVD, and if you give an elevation for a benchmark for construction, you're going in 88 datum, you're going to overstate the elevation by 10.98 inches, and that's exactly what happened. They provided no information to the Hovinds regarding the datum that was used in the benchmark. The state law requires that if you're going to provide survey information as a professional land surveyor, you have, and it's not to be used for construction, or if it's preliminary, you have to make a note of that. That's the law. The mandatory rules of professional conduct that govern professional land surveyors and those that offer such services requires that they take into account all local ordinances, and that would include the City of Wabay ordinances, state statutes, and the like. You know, the fraudulent concealment issue here, Banner can't concede any facts that the Hovinds raised in this matter. He won't even address the facts that Mike Hovind put in his affidavit or in his sworn testimony. And it ignores all contrary evidence. But that's not the standard for summary judgment. You know, when you allege fraud, fraud may not be presumed, but you don't often in a case find some defendant that raises his hand and says, yes, you got me. That's not the way it works. It has to be, you have to read between the lines from the circumstantial evidence. And that is why summary judgment is important. The preference in the law is not to decide cases on summary judgment. The preference in the law is to allow the trial on the merits where issues of fact exist. And that is why all reasonable inferences have to be drawn in favor of the non-moving party. In this case, the fraudulent concealment occurred in 2009 when midway through construction, Hovens asked Stephen Ramos, who had provided the benchmark for construction, to come back out and verify the proper floor elevation. He comes back out, he shoots the floor elevation, and remember, at this time there were no cabinets in the cabin, there's no countertop in the cabin, there's no walls, the electrical wasn't done. These people were building a cabin without outside financing with their own assets as time and money allowed them. And he comes out and he verifies that it's over 1810. In fact, it was 1810.19. So that left Mike Hovind to believe that the contractor who prepared the forms, they took the benchmark, they shot it with a laser to set the forms to get the right height, they added the plate on top of the concrete, they added the height of the floor trusses, they added the flooring material, led Mike to believe that the contractor had done just what he asked, make it a couple inches higher for safety. 1810.19 would be 1810, 2-3 inches. So he believed that they had confirmed. That's what he asked. The single object of this party's relationship was to ensure that this lake home in an area of special flood hazard would be built, and then to verify that it had been built in accordance with the minimum elevation requirement.
Mr. Ulberg, I want to talk with you and have your share your thoughts regarding the elevation certificate of May of 2010. So I understand Mr. Wheeler's argument. That's significant in two ways. One, it represents a date of accrual for the six-year statute of limitations. And in addition, it seems like it is his principal evidence that there was no fraudulent concealment in this case. So talk to us, if you would, about that.
I think that is a very important issue in this case. That elevation certificate was done in May of 2011. It was done.
I could be wrong.
2010, thank you. It was done simply so that the Hovens would have it in the event that they needed to apply for flood insurance. But remember, they'd already had Stephen Ramos, the guy who provided the benchmark for construction, come out and verify the proper elevation, they thought. Nowhere in that elevation certificate does Banner ever state the elevation at less than 1810. They provide the elevation at 1810. The attached sheets say something like, NAVD or NGVD 1929 plus 10.9 inches equals NAVD 88. As the late Honorable John Flemmer noted, this was maybe confusing. It certainly was to the Hovens. This is a very esoteric form to look at, especially if the professional land surveyor who provided you the benchmark for construction has come back and already verified that you've met the minimum, at least represented that from all apparent appearances.
Does the letter itself state that you were referring to, the January 2010 letter? It seemed like that was just a letter that provided an elevation. I don't recall there being any statements in it specifically with regard to it meeting the city's base floor elevation.
Right. It provides the elevation of 1810.19 in NAVD 88. It doesn't say you've met it. It doesn't say that you haven't.
That's why I asked for the fraudulent concealment claim. So what in any of the documents or information that you were provided would constitute the fraud?
Well, it makes me wonder why they didn't provide it when they shot the elevation in the year before, 2009. Why didn't they provide it then?
But that's certainly part of your negligence argument or your underlying claim. But here when we're talking about accrual, and the related concept of fraudulent concealment, then we need to look at what did the Hovens know? What information were they provided that would constitute either under the accrual, either actual or constructive notice, or to support your argument that there was some fraudulent concealment based on our law on what that requires that would delay their obligation to commence their lawsuit earlier?
Well, Banner certainly knew, and the evidence is that Kent Johnson at Banner was involved in setting the BFE in this location. This is obviously a very flood-prone area of South Dakota. Kent Johnson was involved in setting this in NGVD 1929, the base flood elevation, according to Stephen Ramos. The firm adopted by the City of Wabay requires that all flood elevations provided in the firm be compared to the base flood elevation in the same datum. Having provided a benchmark for the construction in the wrong or the inappropriate datum, then confirming in the inappropriate datum the elevation naturally led the Hovens to believe that they had met the minimum requirement.
So I think that what was pointed out by co-counsel is the elevation certificate itself did have some conversion information, and not just the formula, but on the sketch itself set forth at the top that did convert the 1988 datum into the 1929 datum. And so, and that showed in order to meet that, then you would need, and it gave the different number and then showed the elevation. So why would that, at a minimum, not be at least constructive notice that the floor elevation did not
I don't think it's constructive notice, Your Honor, because they'd already assured the Hovens, their clients, in their minds, that they had exceeded the 1810. In the conversion information, they never state the elevation at less than 1810. They're very careful never to state it at less than 1810. What they do is say you have to add 0.915 feet for NGVD 1929, which the base flood elevation is in. And so it's esoteric enough that these clients would not have caught this, especially they're midway through construction. They think that the professional land surveyor has come out and verified that they're okay. Banner had to have known that unless they tell the Hovens, you're too low, they're going to continue the construction at that point. And that's exactly what happened. Not only are they going to continue the construction, they're going to miss the statute of limitations if it's a six. You're not going to assert a claim if they don't know, and they clearly didn't know. Banner has not addressed anywhere in its arguments the mandatory rules of professional conduct that govern professional land surveying. And those include a duty of fidelity. And I submit the duty of fidelity isn't just accuracy. We think about vinyl records that we had as kids, high fidelity records, accuracy, exactness, reproduction of sound. But fidelity also means, I think, in the context of marriage, it means faithfulness to an obligation. They have a duty of fidelity. They have a duty of fidelity. They have a duty to disclose all pertinent information.
Is that the same as a fiduciary duty under our law?
I'm not sure it's exactly the same, but if we look at the restatement, even under the common law, if we ignore the mandatory rules of professional conduct, and we just look at the common law, and we think about the Duchesneau versus Miller case, or even in an arm's length transaction, a duty to disclose can sometimes arise, and a duty to disclose matters can arise because of a fiduciary or other similar relation of trust and confidence between the parties. I can't think of a more obvious example of where somebody is more reliant on a professional than setting an elevation benchmark in an area of special flood hazard. The Hovens were completely dependent on Banner to get the elevation right and then to verify that it was right. And for Banner to suggest that even though it has a mandatory obligation to provide all pertinent information, to be completely truthful and objective in all reports to its clients and provide all pertinent information, I just have trouble with that. Why didn't they just plainly tell the Hovens, you're too low?
So in your use of the term plainly kind of tracks the question I was going to ask you. It seems to me that this is a scenario where the information is actually in the elevation certificate, but your claim appears to me that it was not in a clear enough manner, or more a,
exactly.
The way it was delivered, not that it wasn't in the certificate.
Exactly. And, Your Honor, I think it's important to go back and look at the elevation certificate that Banner provided for the Gregersons. When they did an elevation certificate for Gregerson's cabin next door, they sent it to the city of Wabay. They copied the Gregersons. They explained the datum shift and the importance of realizing that Banner's using the 88 datum for its elevations, and they explained this. Nothing like that happened with the Hovens. And you got to ask why. Why didn't they make sure that the Hovens understood the datum shift? Especially when you look at the request for admissions, their response, where they admit that if you don't explain the datum, if you don't explain the base flood elevation and you don't explain datums, then the owner could build a cabin that's too low. That's exactly what happened. And we respectfully submit that the professional has a greater duty than that, and they're mandatory rules. The duty of fidelity, if it just meant exactness, you know, I think it means more than that. The rules of professional, the guidelines for professional practice of land surveying in South Dakota, there's all kinds of references to accuracy, the importance of accuracy. That's kind of a given when you're talking about land surveying, that you're going to be accurate in your land surveying. But they have a duty to provide all pertinent information and to give it in a way that the client understands. It's not good enough to say, well, we technically gave the information and you should have been able to figure this out. Under these circumstances, under this specific set of facts, I think that's asking too much. And I think that Banner knew that the Holdens were going to continue construction and would not catch the fact that their cabin is too low under these circumstances. This is a really important case, not only for the parties, but also for this area of South Dakota, where they've watched their tax base be eroded by floodwaters. That's why Wabay enacted this flood damage prevention ordinance, and it's an important issue. Banner has been involved in this area for a long time, and under the circumstances, it has no business providing an elevation benchmark for construction without datum information. In a datum, it's inappropriate for comparison, for the mandatory comparison to the firm adopted by the local ordinance. They haven't met their professional obligations, and they knew it, and they knew that they'd screwed up, and they knew that this cabin had been built exactly 0.915 feet, the datum shift, too low. And that's why they didn't tell the Holdens, we respectfully submit. That's the reasonable inference to be drawn from the facts, and we would ask that the court affirm the late Honorable John Flemmer's denial of summary judgment that reverse, in part, the grant on the fraudulent concealment claim. If the court has no more questions, I'll sit down.
I have one. So if we were to agree with Judge Flemmer's ruling on the fraudulent concealment and find there was no fraudulent concealment, do you still have an argument on the accrual matter? And if so, what is that?
Right. Well, as I noted in my brief, you know, the court has said at times that the predecessor to 15-2A-3 is a statute of limitations. The court has said that statute of repose don't allow for equitable tolling and stuff. This statute clearly does. 15-2A-7 clearly does. But I think when you look at 15-2-13 and you look at 15-2A-6, you'd have to conclude that, and the court has ruled that the statute of limitations and the statute of repose are that they're not mutually exclusive. They work together. There can be a six-year statute alongside the statute of repose. I think I would have to agree with that based on 15-2A-6 after reading that again. I think the case rises and falls on the fraudulent concealment. And I think that when all the reasonable inferences to be drawn from all the facts and all the evidence were the single object of the party's relationship, was to ensure that they got the right elevation at the start of construction and to confirm that they had the right elevation midway through. There's an issue of fact here for a jury's resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ober. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case will be submitted and will be in recess.